leading the charge. Lord Gunn was a veteran of centuries of warfare, but was under no illusions about the disparity in ship mastery between the two of them. Perhaps Russ could have done it. He'd have summoned up something, dragged out from the depths and hurled into the enemy's treacherous faces. That was what he was for, to do the impossible, to haul the Legion out of the mire and set it loping back into the hunt. "Lord, the fleet is pulling clear," reported Ragnarok's navigation master. "Trajectory has been set. Are we joining them?" Even as the man spoke, fresh shudders radiated up from Ragnarok's bowels. More impacts followed, solid rounds, torpedoes, lasbursts, all raking along shield arcs that were already close to failing. If Gunn closed his eyes, he could feel the ship's agony, cut with a thousand wounds and bleeding into the vacuum. He could order a final charge. He could send the battleship surging into the oncoming Alpha Legion vanguard, destroying as much of it as he could before they snapped the ship's neck at last. They might even board before the end, and he'd die like a warrior, the corpses of his enemies piled high around him on the command bridge. "Then I would slay with a smile," he thought.
"Pull away,"
Gunn ordered, forcing the words out.
"Cover the retreat. Maintain ordnance, Barosh. We will be the last to fall back."
Then he turned, his huge shoulders a fraction lower, and looked away from the forward oculus, sickened by it. Chapter 2 The Runes. Images, carved into ever firelit stone and iron, crude to the casual eye, but then they were never carved for the attention of casual eyes. Those of the Vilka Fenrika knew how to look at them, how to read them, how to mark the balance and the weight and the undermeaning. No Fenrisian sigil had a horizontal stroke. Every incision was vertical or diagonal, gouged out by the tip of a burin or a killing blade. The greatest shapesmiths of the ice world, the Volunder, spent as long crafting their tools as they did etching the sacred sigils, for the tools were charged with marking the blank screens of wood, stone, metal, or bone, with devices that would last for eternity. The creators breathed out the name of the rune as they worked, hunched amid shadows, fixing the contour of it against the material, binding two souls together, creating something greater than the mark and the marked. It could take a decade to complete an inscription. If an error was made, the wood would be burned, the stone smashed, the metal melted, the bone shattered. The Volunder embellished the meaning-bearing script with knotwork patterns, traced in razor-slender lines around the ranked rows of sigils, calling up the souls of Wyrms, of eyeless creatures from the Fenrisian deep dark, of black-barked ewes, of venerated blades of renown. No cut was made without deliberation, and no symbol was idly chosen, for the lattice of sigils and emblems carried its own meaning. The Fenrika knew, as they had always known, that the cuts warded against the soul-eaters, for the underrealm was made of ideas, and every idea was a word, and every word had its rune. Thus the work was not decoration, it was metaphysics. The Primarch, Leman Russ, knew all this. He knew it as completely as any living soul, and understood more of the ways of the runes than even the greatest of his smiths, for he was made of the same stuff from which the tapestry of fate was woven, and the runes penetrated his being in a way that none of his warriors would ever truly understand. And yet they had known of the rune marks for longer than him. Fenrisians had understood the sacred forms for as long as men had lived on the Death World, and men had lived on the Death World for longer than the Imperium had been in existence. Runes had been carved on bone fragments, out on the ever-moving ice, long before Russ came among the Vilka. when they were used to keep the worst of the cold from the flicker circles of fire pits. The old goatee had mumbled eternal truths from under layers of cured hides, turning the bone tokens over in gnarled hands, communing with the pulse and beat of the world soul, as their violent home churned its way through the sea of stars. This was not always well understood, not even by the wise. The Primarchs were strangers to their people. They had no home worlds, not even Terra. All they had to their names were adoptive subjects who moulded them, and were moulded in turn, until something new was created, something which might be strong or might be broken, but was always a hybrid, whose provenance was shrouded by the capricious games of labyrinthine deities. Every gene son of the Emperor, in the dark of the doubting night, could wonder how much of his psyche had been forged in the amniotic tanks of the hearth-world, and how much on the plains and forests and deserts of the planets they had been scattered to. Every one of them could hear the corrosive whispers in their dreams. "You are the stranger. You were not meant for this place. Your people are not your own." Even the Lord of Winter and War, the living embodiment of Fenris, clad in wolf pelts, his frost-blue eyes the colour of the Arch of Asaheim, heard those whispers. And he heard them strongly now, as he squatted fur-draped on the stone floor of his chamber, letting bone tokens run through his scarred fingers. Those fingers had spent most of their time clasping an axe. They had never been used to craft or to caress, so they were broad fingers, the flesh as hard as boiled leather, underpinned by adamantium-like bones. For a long time, knowing what he knew of his own strength, Russ had doubted whether it was possible for a Primarch to be truly hurt, let alone killed. Now he knew that both were possible, for he had done it himself. If he closed his eyes, he could still see the look of startled horror in Magnus's lone eye, moments before the screaming warp hurricane had ripped his broken body into fragments. In his dreams, he heard his brother's final words before the end, just as the glass pyramids shattered. "You are a sword in the wrong hands, my brother. You have severed an innocent neck, and it will plague you for ever." Russ had given the words no thought at the time. For every man, legionary and demigod, he had ever slain had pleaded for his life before the end. They always did, clawing at life like a starving whelp for the teat. In any case, he had hated Magnus. He had hated him completely for what he was and for what he pretended to be. And yet. He picked up the rune tokens and cast them down again. They fell in a loose clatter, tracing out the swirl of future lines graven on the stone. Some fell face down and were ignored. Others showed their mark to the sullen light of the fires.
"Alwas, Gugnir, Dag, Rizam, Izhad."
What did it mean? Russ relaxed his exhausted eyes, red-rimmed from 2 weeks without sleep, letting them lose focus as he attempted to peer beyond the material realm.
"There is a pattern. They speak. The All-Father is silent, but the runes speak. There is a pattern."
If that were so, he could not see it. He persevered, opening his mind to possibility. There was a glimmer, for a moment, just on the edge of the senses, then nothing. From the velvet shadows, Freaky growled, a rumble that curled along the floor like spilled oil. The two true wolves were slumped at the edge of the light circle, barred from entering the rune's ward. Geri, the wiser of the two, made no sound. Russ looked up at them and cracked a dry smile.
"Wasting my time?"
he asked, scratching the stubble on his chin.
"Aye, perhaps."
Then he looked up and around, tracing his gaze across the chamber. Old blades hung from chains, twisting gently. The braziers burned low, emitting only dull light and little heat. The place reeked of embers and old sweat, smells of confinement. The door had been locked for a long time, and none of his people would dare cross the threshold unless he summoned them. One rune remained face down, the one that always did so. However Russ threw the tokens, the bear never showed itself.
"I read one thing right, though," Russ mused. "We are beaten from the same ingot, he and I."
Geri looked up at her master, golden eyes unblinking. Russ clambered to his knees. He stretched his huge arms out, feeling the muscles flex, missing the weight of Mjanar. Then he paused, his heart beating heavily, and listened. There were no sounds, save for the ragged breath of wolves and the spit of the coals, underlaid by the ever-present grind of the colossal engines that drove Hrafnikol through the twists and shafts of the Alaxes Nebula.
"Deeper in," Russ breathed,
knowing what the fleet was being driven to. He could have gone back then. He could have taken command again, wresting it from Gunn, who only knew how to fight the old wars, and whose soul was already half-dragged into the cold grip of Morkai. The others would have welcomed it. Their eyes would have shone again, for the Wolf King would be back among them. And surely he would have answers, and the pattern of war would swing around again, and the wolves would go back to being the masters of their own fate, to being the feared, the killers. They'd been those things for so long, telling the stories to one another, building the psychology of invincibility, taking on the mantle of the exceptional. It had shielded them for a time, what they believed they had become. For a while they had lived up to the impossible, and he had let them, sharing in the glory, watching as the galaxy learned terror from them. He could have gone back. Sooner or later, he would have to. Freki growled again, showing disdain. Geri remained silent. Slowly, Leman Russ, Primarch of the Sixth Legion, reached down for the runes again. Gunn reached his own chambers at the summit of Ragnarok's command spire later than he'd intended. Everything seared at his nerves, goading him, provoking the rage that made him superlative when the shape of war allowed it. All that rage was wasted now, locked inside the iron coffin of his starship, unable to find expression where it belonged, on the field of battle, his enemy within range of bolter or blade, close enough to smell. Now the wolves were retreating again, mauled again, piling deeper into the unknown, and the shame of it gnawed away at him. 20 vessels, including the strike cruiser Runeblade, had been lost in the assault, and only 7 successfully retrieved by boarding squads. 3 more ships had been lost to the enemy on the retreat, unable to maintain the pace and swallowed up by Alpha Legion hunters snapping at their heels. Another had been enveloped in the acidic gas clouds during the full-about manoeuvre, and had been dragged with agonizing slowness into the metal-chewing heart of the clouds. The core of the Legion's vessels remained intact, though savaged again, and now had to maintain full speed from damaged engines, even as the routes into the cluster's heart grew narrower and more perilous.
"Damn the Khan," Gunn thought.
The White Scars had been in range during the first assault, and they had surely known the odds the Sixth Legion faced. It still wasn't clear why they had chosen not to come to their aid. Had they, too, turned from the All-Father's side? It was easy enough to imagine that they had. Perhaps it was this that had snapped Russ's resolve. Until the Khan's failure, the Primarch had been his old defiant self. Afterwards, the fire had died. Gunn slammed his fist against the door release, and the iron panel slid open. The chamber beyond was just like all the others on Ragnarok, barely lit, thick with the aromas of coal ash and burnished metal, decked out sparsely with age-blackened wood and fittings of iron. 2 wolves waited for him inside. His second-in-command, Scryer Strikes Slow, long, dreadlocked hair framing a sharp face, latticed with scars, and Azir, whose augmented chin line glistened metallically in the gloom. Other figures flickered as hololiths, transmitted from their own ships, since intervessel transport at such speeds had become too insanely dangerous, even for Fenrisian crews. Ogvai was the foremost of those, brooding in a luminous shroud of pale green. Lord Gunn joined the circle.
"So," he said, "defeat again, and now running."
No one replied. The silence was damning in itself. Running, the foulest word.
"And where is he in all this? Has he spoken?"
Ogvai shook a weary head. The Nidhoggur had been in the thick of the fighting, and was still in flames across its lower levels.
"We are all curs at the table now."
"Then what do we do?"
asked Gunn.
"He will not hear me. He knows what you would say," said Ogvai.
"We wait," said Skryer.
The strike's slow moniker was a piece of wolf's mordancy. He was the fastest blade in the great company, and had a kill tally of 19 Alpha Legionnaires from both boarding actions.
"He communes with the Goti. He searches for the weird path."
"He is the Primarch," muttered Aesir.
"And what if he is? I did not swear my blade to a rune-reader," said Gunn. "I saw him fight on Shrike, and that was the Wolf King."
"None of us are the same now," said Ogvai.
"Not like we were on Shrike."
"We can be. He should be fighting, not sulking on Hrafnakil."
Aesir looked uneasy, as did some others. They all had their doubts, but Ross was still the Legion's master.
"So what do you say, Gunnar?" asked Ogvai. "Just whining to ease your stomach, or do you have something for me to listen to?"
Gunn hesitated. Treachery had spread so far throughout the body of the Imperium that the slightest intimation of insubordination felt dangerous. In truth, he did not know what he wished for, other than to have things back the way they were. Russ, with fire in his old belly and cursing the enemy from between spittle-laced fangs, and for he himself to be the old shield-bearer at his master's side, doing what they had all been gene-bred to do. He tried to gauge how the others felt, what they would be ready to do, how to take them with him. He was aware of his inadequacy, then. He was a warrior, a skull-taker, not a diplomat.
"We cannot run forever,"
he said, sticking to what they all knew was true.
"We have not mapped the inside of the cloud. The tunnels will close around us, and we will have to turn. There will be a reckoning, and we cannot fail a third time. We must find a way."
A note of something like desperation entered his voice then. He heard it in himself, but could not suppress it.
"There will be a way."
Some heads nodded. A low murmur of approval, laced with throat-catching growls, echoed over the vox from those on other ships.
"And the Wolf King?"
asked Ogvai. Gunn gave him a steady look.
"There is more to the Legion than the Primarch," he said,
hating the words as they spilled from his mouth, though not wishing to take them back.
"Perhaps that is what fate is teaching us here."
The captured Iota Malephilus rattled through the twisting capillaries along with the rest of the fleet, now flanked by corvettes bearing Space Wolves' livery. In the final moments before the retreat had gathered full pace, a few transports of Karls had been landed, giving the vessel a skeleton 6th Legion crew. Bjorn's pack had then gone through the rest of the ship methodically, killing the remaining senior Alpha Legion menials, securing mid-ranking mortals in the cells until they could be assessed, and pressing the lowliest and the servitors into keeping the ship together. Sensor-carrying bomb crews swept every deck, searching for booby traps left behind, and disarming anything that looked remotely suspect. And because this was an Alpha Legion vessel, everything was suspect, and everything was checked, and then checked again. Bjorn remained on the command bridge, overseeing the hasty repair of guidance systems damaged during the assault. There was still much to do. The navigator had sealed himself inside his blast-resistant blister at the summit of the ship's topmost spire, and they would soon have to find a way to hammer their way inside without fatally compromising the ship's warp capability. Every cogitator system had been protected by layers of encryption, making all but the most basic operations fiendishly difficult. All they could do for the moment was patch up the damage, hunt down the remainder of the crew, and keep the ship on as close an approximation of the void path as possible. Bjorn glanced down at a mid-range auger display beamed onto a lens to the left of the command throne. The markers of Alpha Legion pursuers were stubbornly visible, just beyond lance range, never slackening their pace. They were impressively dogged. Not for the first time he found himself speculating over what their orders were. Had Alpharius been in communication with Magnus? Had the Khan followed him into treachery? There were plenty of other Primarchs who hated the wolves enough to support their culling. Angron, certainly. Lorgar, possibly. The Lion? An outside chance that he was part of it, though his honour would surely have demanded an open declaration of war. The frustrating thing was not knowing. They needed to get to Terra, to hear the words of truth from the All-Father's mouth. Until then, all they had were rumours and shadows. As Bjorn ran through the various scenarios for the 100th time, a rune suddenly lit up on the close-range sensor array. He augmented the feed. Something was closing in on the Iota Malefolus, travelling fast, seemingly launched from one of the other wolves' ships. He switched to a true vision monitor, and saw it come in, thrusters burning blue-white, powering hard just to keep pace with the hurtling behemoths around it. Immediately, Iota Malefolus's anti-ship gunnery trained itself on the intruder, tracking its erratic inbound course.
"Stand down,"
Bjorn voxed to the gun crews, hoping that enough of a chain of command had been established for the signal to reach its destination. He pushed himself from the throne and moved from the dais, indicating to the mortal shipmaster a Kael, taken from the Ragnarok's complement, to assume command. He knew where the incoming ship would dock, for he had recognized the profile of the vessel, an interfleet crew lighter, containing a maximum of 4 passengers. He had no idea why in hell they were trying to use one of those at such speeds, when there was a functioning Vox network available, or even teleporters, if they were desperate. Clearly, someone had thought it was important to come over in person. Bjorn hurried down to the sub-bridge receiving hangar, a relatively modest hall in comparison with the cavernous main docking levels below. As he went, he smelled the subtle aromas of the Alpha Legion on every surface, a melange of fragrances, eluding definition, hard to eradicate, even if he had been given the chem teams to hose down the floors and walls. By the time he reached the hangar's apron, the void shields over the exit aperture had been withdrawn, and the lighter was coming in to land. The vessel touched down heavily, bringing the stink of overheated engines with it. Steam boiled up from the wedge-shaped stabilizer vanes as the undercarriage flexed on the deck, and a blunt embarkation hatch hissed open. The first two down the ramp were warriors in bone-white Mark II Legion armour, the overlapping plates covered in black-inked runes. They bore images of Morkai on their breastplates, and carried long-handled, single-bladed axes the length of 4 halberds. Behind them, clanging down the metal, came the third occupant, a massive figure decked in archaic plate. He went helmless, and Bjorn saw white-streaked and plaited hair piled over a lined, tattooed face. The skin was pierced with a dozen metal spikes. He carried a long staff with him, crowned by a slender animal skull and hung with jangling rune totems. The atmosphere across the hangar seemed to electrify, and Bjorn felt an itching sensation run down his spine. The two white-clad attendants fell back, allowing their master to limp more clearly into view. Though tall, the Goti seemed strangely withered, as if his body were wasting away within its containing brace of ceramite. Bjorn knew the name of this one, just as all in the Legion knew it. Kvar, who is divided, the Wolf King's counsellor.
"Then," You are the fell-handed,
the rune priest said, in a voice that sounded like claws scraping through coal shards.
One-handed, Jarl, Bjorn corrected. Named that way since Prospero.
Gavar fixed him unsteadily with two black-pinned eyes, their irises as deep and rich as polished bronze. The rune priest looked unfocused, as if not sure where or when he was. A faint tang of ritual incense rose from his gorget collar.
"For now,"
he said eventually, his cracked lips twitching.
"You will come with me."
Bjorn hesitated. He had much to do just to keep the Iota Malefilus from spinning apart into the void, and no warning had come in from the Hierophnical.
"On whose command?"
he demanded, holding his ground. Kavar shot him a wry look.
"Whose do you think?"
A serpentine smile twisted across an ever-moving face.
"He likes you. Consider that a blessing, or a burden. Your choice."
He turned without waiting for a reply, and his honour guard fell in alongside him. Bjorn took a quick look around the hangar. It was his prize, one extracted in the face of defeat, and it would have been good to stamp his mark on it. But orders were orders, and rune priests did not expect them to be questioned. He started walking. One standard hour after his infiltration, the intruder moved out. Penetration of the Hierophnical's outer hull had been difficult. A Gloriana-class battleship was a vast thing, a sprawling city in space that housed tens of thousands of souls and played host to staged battles across its flanks that the battlefields of old Terra would scarce have been able to match. But even so, the wolves had been vigilant about their perimeter. His one-man shadowcraft had been forced to dance and spin, running the gauntlet of ferocious flak scatters, while the energies of ship-killing lances blazed and roared through the void. He'd gone eventually for a knuckle-shaped protuberance, hanging below the main engines, a hulking mass of ironwork that had clung like a tumour to the vast cliff of Hierophnical's nadir-facing flank. There had been just the tiniest gap in anti-ship lasfire, just the faintest weakening of void shield coverage, just enough, barely, for his void sliver to slip into the shadow and break through. His ship had never made it into the Hierophnical's interior. It had been designed to deliver him close enough to enact the boarding cycle, and then pull away, back out into the maelstrom of lasbeams. Its destruction, 19 seconds after it had got him within 100 meters of the flagship's side, would register on Hierophnical's data recorders, erasing suspicion should the augury of his incoming strike ever be checked by an unusually diligent menial. 100 meters of empty void was trivial to traverse, and his power-armoured form had shot across the gap like a shell from a bolter. The steel-grey hull had raced towards him, lit up by the flash of incendiaries bursting across a metallic horizon. He'd slammed into the armour plates, clamping on with mag grips, then run a scan and crawled, spider-like, to the nearest access hatch. 2 breacher charges had been fixed, followed by a brief retreat, then a silent explosion. Seconds after that he was inside, crawling through a metal-latticed interior, latching on to buttress rods and burrowing towards the pressurized zones. He'd located an angle between 2 brace beams, perfectly dark, surrounded by thick metal plating. It was 30 meters in from the infiltration point, stinking of oils and fetid bilge fluids, at least 100 meters below the nearest inhabited deck. There he waited. He rode out the shudders as the Hierophnical took a pounding from the ranged ships beyond. The thought occurred to him more than once that the flagship might be destroyed in the barrage, in which case his mission would have proved both pointless and short. Soon, though, it became apparent that the wolves' offensive had failed, as it had always been destined to, and the boom of subwarp engines powering to full burn told him that the flagship was resuming its course back into the heart of the cluster. So he waited until the hour had passed, listening to the countless creaks of the starship's interior under transit stress. During that period, he did three things. First, he ran checks on the specialist equipment his armor was provided with. Scan-resistant resonance emitters, enhanced auger units, whisper-quiet power mechanisms. He was wearing Space Wolf Grey, naturally, with pack markings identifying him as a warrior of Haval Redblade's great company. The disguise was not enough to withstand determined scrutiny, but sufficient to allow brief periods of movement out in the open. Second, he fixed a lock reading into his helm's cogitator, which then plotted a route to his destination. Hrafnikel's interior would no doubt differ significantly from those he was used to, but all Legion flagships were laid down to a similar template, allowing him some certainty. Third, just before setting off, he activated the encrypted transmitter lodged underneath his power unit backpack. He checked that the encrypted data burst was clearing the Hrafnikel's void shields and getting to where it needed to be. It was all but undetectable to anything other than its partnered receiver array, but even if it was somehow intercepted, then the encryption was designed to mimic the faulty output of a failing real space auger node, something the Hrafnikel had hundreds of right now. The hour clicked up on his chronometer, and he took a moment to gather himself. He was buried in the ironwork entrails of a vaster-than-vast starship, surrounded by warriors who would kill him as soon as they smelled him, isolated from any support, lightly armed, alone. By any standards, even those of his own secretive legion, it was a dubious undertaking. But then that was the shape of war, and in any case, he was psychologically incapable of being daunted by it. So he moved off on schedule, going silently, slipping into the shadows he had been born to traverse. The transit over to the Hrafnikel was violent. The lighter was buffeted by the enormous engine washes of an entire fleet at full burn, and still in close confinement. Bjorn, his body thrown around within his restraint harness, glanced out of the armor-glass real-view portal, and saw the leviathans all around him, their thrusters flaring like supernovae. Beyond the silhouettes of the great hulls lay the tortured interior of Alaxis, glowing in petulant fury, as raw as any wound in the materium. The rune priest sat opposite him, fingers drumming on his staff, eyes flickering, body never at rest. Every so often he'd mumble something unintelligible, before his expression snapped back into focus. When it did that, there was a terrifying intensity to it, though it only lasted moments before disappearing again. It was as if he were flitting between locations, one real, one hyper-real, never really alighting in either. Bjorn did not scorn that, for Goti were Goti. The rune priests were one of the few constants that straddled the worlds of the old ice and the transformed Azaheim. The seers of the runes remained, peering into the chaos underpinning the senses, taking the cost onto their own souls, so that the tribes they served could navigate and prosper. K'var's being, so they said, was shared between oververse and underverse. In another legion, no such deviance from orthodoxy would ever have been tolerated, but in this, as in so much else, the wolves were the exception. "I do not understand," Bjorn said eventually. K'var blinked at him twice, and his focus clarified.
"Why the Wolf King wishes to see you? He is treading obscure paths now. He sees something, and now I see something. He will cling to what has been revealed."
That did not make things much more obvious. The lighter veered sharply. The two white-armored guards remained as silent as grave markers, their faces hidden by slab-fronted helms.
"Why does he hide?" pressed Bjorn,
knowing the short flight was the only opportunity he'd get for answers. K'var snorted a laugh.
"Hide? Is that what they're saying?"
He shook his white-streaked head.
"This legion only knows how to do one thing. Remember, He is not one of us. He is better than that.
The rune priest looked thoughtful suddenly, as if that idea had only just occurred to him.
He is not Heidi. Not now. For the first time, he is listening.
Listening to what? Bjorn almost asked, but thought better of it. The lighter ducked under the immense shadow of Hrafnikal's docking apertures. Bjorn caught a fleeting glimpse of a battle-scarred wolf's head device on the scorched flanks, almost erased from the metal by Lasfire.
"I do not know what to say to him," said Bjorn.
As the lighter entered Hrafnikal's gravity bubble, K'var gave him a look that almost amounted to understanding, the strangest of all the rune priest's chameleonic expressions.
"Our old weapons are blunted," he said. "He sees it, even if the others do not."
The crooked smile returned, the glassy eyes, the impression that he was seeing things that were not really there.
"We cannot get out of Alaxis. We are not strong enough. What does that tell you?"
Bjorn did not know, but then he did not accept the verdict. There was nothing the Sixth Legion could not accomplish, given enough time and enough fervour. He made no attempt to gainsay the rune priest, though, for by then the lighter had entered the hangar, and the docking legs were already extending. K'var slammed his restraint harness back, glad to be free of the shackles, and got, wincing, to his feet.
"Come then, one-handed," he said. "Time to see if his faith in you is well-founded."
6 hours after the abortive attempt to break out of the Alaxis Nebula, Ragnarok assumed the vanguard position at the head of the fleet. The rest of the capital ships clustered in close, at times less than 1,000 meters away from one another, thundering through the twisting cavities in the hellish maze like cattle jostling at a gate. Another escort ship was lost during that period, an outrider, sucked into the crimson fronds as it attempted to execute a tight turn through a ragged gap. The edges of the void tunnels were getting closer, and great plumes of matter continued to be ejected, raking across the already stressed void shields of the larger ships. And all the while, patiently, carefully, the Alpha Legion maintained their pursuit, never falling beyond the wolves' rear scopes, sticking to the task with relentless consistency. Lord Gunn stood on his ship's bridge, watching the fleet reports scroll in one after the other. The tally of damage and loss was becoming maddening, and there was nothing he could do to staunch it, at least not while remaining true to his orders not to engage again.
"Hrafnikal is losing pace," he muttered,
watching the fleet flagship gradually slip down the order. The massive battleship looked to be leaking atmosphere from several sections, and its subwarp engines were glowing dangerously. Azir looked up from his station 2 meters away.
"It is wounded, Jarl. We send them messages, but they are not answered."
Gunn watched the colossal Hrafnikal reel amid the gusts of rust red. It had been the finest ship in the fleet, the equal of any boasted by another legion, and now its rotten carcass was drifting into ruin, dragged along in the wake of lesser warships.
"No word from the Primarch?"
he asked, already knowing the answer. Azir shook his head. Gunn slumped in the throne, pressing his chin against steepled fingers. If the Hrafnikal fell back further, it would become a liability. Ragnarok would have to slow the pace just to provide ranged cover, and that would endanger the other ships of the fleet.
"Who commands this ship now?"
he asked.
"No clear word."
Gunn stood up.
"And that is not good enough."
Vizier looked up at him uncertainly.
"Jarl? It is the flagship.
If the Primarch will not command it, others must."
He started to walk, striding up from the command throne towards the heavy blast doors at the rear of the bridge's observation tier.
"Take command here. Ensure we remain at the biting edge, and allow no release of the pace."
"The fleet is at full burn,"
warned Azir. Gunn turned to give him a withering look.
"Tell Hrafnikal I'm coming." Tell them to have their teleporters ready, and tell them to lower their bridge shields, or I will rip them clear myself.
Russ had come to Fenris, so they told him afterwards, during a time of storms. The Skialds still spoke of them, the northern skies cracking open, lit by sheets of silver, and the earth of unbreakable Azaheim shifting for the first and last time in mortal memory. Russ himself remembered none of that, nor of the time before, save for the fractured dreams that came to him in the brief lulls between battles, the smells of chemicals and the hum of arcane machinery, the half-aware sensation of floating in fluids, listening to the careful movements of attendants outside the amniotic tanks, the tick-tock of monitoring equipment, the whispering of voices that may or may not have been human. To have those memories was impossible. So they must have been projections from after the event, only crystallizing once the Allfather had explained the circumstances of his creation. After that, Russ had been forced to accept that he had not been birthed on Fenris at all, and the wolves, the ice, the storm, and the summer fire were all a random imposition on a childhood that had been conceived very differently. Of course, there was a sense in which he had always known that. Even before the Allfather had come, he had felt the wrongness of it, as if some colossal sham had been perpetrated, locking him in a nightmare at once seductive and terrifying. The wolves bowed their heads before him, as did the mortal warriors he conquered or slew with such bewildering ease, and he wanted to scream at them, "Who are you? Why am I stronger than you?" There had been no understanding of this on Terra. The Emperor, the Allfather, his shifting visage, always impossible to read, had kept him in isolation for a long time, doling out information in morsels, teaching him to use power armor, to command starships, to control the warp awareness that ran through his veins as thickly as his hyperoxygenated blood.
"I could leave Fenris now," Russ had once told his father. "The planet is too wild for life. It will never support the armies you deserve."
Leave Fenris. Unimaginable to think that he had ever said that. At the time of that exchange, decades ago, the Fenrisians of the Sixth Legion were being brutally moulded into the Death World's image. They had started to build the Fang, hollowing out the great mountain with earth gougers the size of warmonger titans. The Emperor had clearly expected the wolves to be drawn from the world of ice and fire, and that, whether by chance or design, their uniquely violent home would remain the proving crucible of the Legion. And so the pretense continued. Russ became more like the Fenrisians than they were themselves. He guzzled Mjod with the Berserks, and wrestled Blackmanes to the bloody snow, and roared out scorn and mirth across the sea of stars. He let the Goti adorn his armour and engrave his swords. He kept out the councils of Gilliman and the Lion, and ignored every emissary from Lorgar. He did just what the Allfather had told him. He became the weapon of last resort, the most faithful, the prosecutor of dirty wars. There was no resentment when Fulgrim's purple and gold legion took the Palatine Aquila, nor when Vulcan was taken aside for so long into secret confidence, nor, most of all, when Horus was made warmaster, and the arguments over who was the truly chosen son became academic. Russ knew, right down in his gut, that the wolves had been made the way they were for a reason, that none other could perform their blood-soaked function. In the final analysis, were the Imperium to falter, it would be his foot pressed against the neck of any usurper, watched over by the benign and inscrutable gaze of his gene-father, the author and definer of all his misery and his uncertainty, all his bliss and all his glory. But now that sham was over. He had truly become what he had once only pretended to be. He felt the world's soul pulse under his skin, and no scrubbing would remove the stain of it. The runes were no longer just marks to be tolerated as the suspicions of a backward people. They spoke to him, like conspiratorial jailers gloating over the turning of a prisoner to the cause. In defeat, he at last understood why the Emperor had never let him leave Fenris behind.
It has claimed me. It has clawed me back.
He looked down at the runes again, scattered before him on the stone, the same pattern as before. The shape of it was emerging, dragged out into reality like a bloodied infant bawling on the tent floor. He stared hard, seeing some of the same things he'd seen before, and new things, blurred by doubt, intruding on the margins of the picture he'd created for himself. He was close now. He could hear some of the words, mumbled by fate, and on the hinterland of hearing. Just a few more throws, just a few more casts onto the shifting sea. The chimes sounded at his doors, shattering his fragile sense of understanding. He had no idea how long he had been studying. From the burned-out braziers it must have been hours. The only light in the chamber came from the ports in the far wall, letting the dull red of the gas clouds flood in.
"Enter," he rasped.
The door to Russ's chamber slid open, revealing the familiar outline of Kvar who is divided, his heavy runic plate crawling with inscriptions in the lambent firelight. Beside the rune priest stood the one-handed, Bjorn, radiating a mix of curiosity, defiance, and doubt. Russ smiled. He was still young, the bear. His ice spirit had not quite been quelled by gene-breeding and psycho-conditioning, and burned much the same as any hunter out on the wastes.
"That is what we need now. That is why they call him out." "So then, one-handed," Russ greeted him. "What do you know of the runes?"
The intruder made his way up from the infiltration point, climbing steadily, moving silently. Maneuvering a battleship the size of the Hrafnikal was a task of mind-bending complexity, requiring the coordinated actions of thousands, and so for over an hour his passage through the decks was unimpeded. He was able to hug the gloom of damaged, darkened corridors. When he had to break into the open, his path lit by the grimy sodium lamps that dotted the lower regions of the starship, he attracted almost no attention. The crew were busy, and rarely raised their gaze towards one of the masters in any case, and would have found little to disturb them if they had. He took in the atmosphere of the vessel. The differences between this and his own legion intrigued him. The smells were almost overpowering, a mix of ash and animal, thick as smog. The Sixth Legion seemed to care little for the fitting of their vessels, though every so often they would surprise him, an intricately carved stone, standing alone in the shadows, covered in traced outlines of mythical beasts, or weapons of exquisite artistry, hanging on chains over granite altars. He catalogued everything, transmitting visual records over the secure link, knowing the Picts would be scrutinized. When he allowed himself to appreciate it, Hrafnikal was awe-inspiring in size and capability. The forge levels alone were colossal. He had crept along gantries in the high vaults, peering down through the columns of churning smoke, watching new armaments crawl off production lines, each attended to by armies of iron-masked menials. The thralls working the lines didn't appear to realize that they were already beaten. Could they come back? Could they somehow rally, even at this late stage? The chance could never be discounted, and thus his presence was more than a triviality. He kept moving. The interior was labyrinthine, and corridors would double back on themselves with almost sadistic regularity. Most of the decks seemed to have been constructed as concentric circles, with chambers radiating out from central spokes. As he progressed, he gradually began to see patterns in the arrangement, as if the whole thing were some kind of ritual space, built for the ceremonial glorification of the warrior caste. "It's not done you much good," he thought to himself, as the first of his two targets came within auger range. He started to go faster, tracking the path towards the comms station, seeing it edge closer on the auger lens with every step he took. Almost there. Kavar did not come in with Bjorn, but limped back off into the shadows to attend to his own business, his movements stiff as a crow's. Once Bjorn was across the portal, the doors slammed closed. The Primarch Lehman Russ knelt on the floor, enclosed in a carved weird circle, bone tokens laid out like scattered childhood toys. Until that hour, Bjorn had only seen the Wolf King in battle stance, or seated on granite thrones passing judgment. To witness him that way, crouching in grimy armor, was unsettling.
"Come closer," said Russ, remaining where he was, waving him in.
Bjorn entered the old fire circle, his plate still bloodied from the Iota Malefilus, his lightning claw hanging inactive by his side.
"Why do you think you are here?"
asked Russ, pushing himself up from the floor. Bjorn could have given a dozen answers to that. It would have been safer to admit ignorance, but he knew that was not what was being asked for.
"Because we are losing," he offered. "Because you are out of answers."
Russ stomped over to his true wolves, reached down to Geri's nape, and ruffled the thick fur.
Gunn thinks that. My Einherjar think that. Now you.
You expected different from me?
I do not know. I spent a lifetime learning to sound the depths of the Fenrisborn, and mastered it completely. And then you come along, and I see how blind I can still be.
He looked back at him, and his blue eyes, so un-Fenrisian, glittered.
Tell me more.
Bjorn felt the danger in the room. Freki's lips pulled back in a half-snarl, exposing yellow fangs the length of his hand.
"Prospero wounded us," said Bjorn, opting for the truth. "You, most of all. Now bad luck dogs us. We are hounded by it, so you remain here while the fleet is cut to pieces, and you do not know what to do. You fear that we will die in the Alaxis Bloodwell. Never get out. Never fight in the battle to come."
"Fear," murmured Russ thoughtfully. "You truly think I fear?"
"There are many breeds of fear," said Bjorn.
Russ drew in a long, grating breath. Bjorn suddenly felt that he was half right, though he didn't strike near the center of it. He was no more insightful than the rest of his legion. Everything was seen through the prism of hunter and prey, either fighting or fleeing, and so he had fallen short.
"Do not think I grieve for Magnus," Russ muttered.
There was animus there still.
"Do not make that mistake. He was executed, and that was what we were charged to do."
His fingers dragged through Geri's nape, harder now.
"Magnus was a bastard. Magnus was a liar. Magnus would look you in the eye and lecture you while he blundered through the immaterium like a raging conunga. Hell, we always knew more than him. What to touch, what not to touch. Our bone rattlers knew more than him. There's intelligence and there's hubris. I don't grieve for Magnus. Not for a second. I'll do it again."
For a moment Bjorn saw the flash of old anger, the tidal wave of wrath that the old Russ could unleash within a heartbeat, glinting like the blood-red sun behind thick clouds, and believed everything he said.
"Maybe so," Bjorn said, going carefully. "But the Magnus was not the enemy."
Russ looked up.
"Really? Tell me why not."
"Valdor knew about the demon on Prospero, and he knew what it meant. Who gave us the orders? Who told us not to sanction Magnus, but to lay waste to his world?"
The blue eyes never faltered.
"It came from the Allfather."
"You know it did not."
"We did what was asked."
"We were deceived."
"We followed the order,"
Russ roared, taking a single step towards him. The twin wolves rose to their haunches, and the chamber suddenly seemed thick with the scent of kill urge. Bjorn stood his ground.
And who could be relied on to do that? Who would carry it through completely, perfectly, even if it meant the breaking of a legion?
He took a deep breath.
We were dupes, my lord. We were Horus's willing instruments.
Those were words of death. The Sixth Legion could endure almost any privation save for humiliation, and that was all he offered his liege lord. Bjorn maintained the gaze lock with his Primarch, never flinching, knowing that Russ could finish him with his bare hands and hardly break a sweat. The chamber fizzed with energy. Russ seemed to tower higher somehow, to drag the shadows to himself, to rear upwards, dark and hollow-eyed. He looked terrifying then, as he must have done at the end on Tizca, breaking the back of the Crimson King amid a world of unleashed murder. Slowly, though, the illusion eroded, and the threat passed.
Well said, Russ murmured.
The Primarch walked over to the chamber's far wall. An iron-rimmed port opened out onto the void beyond. Open space glared back, the same rust-red as it had been for many months, clear of stars, churning and chaotic.
"Do not think I don't know what our nature has cost us," Russ said, gazing out through the dirty armor-glass. "Other legions have not borne the brunt as we have. Others have forged their own kingdoms. They tell me Gilliman wrote a book. Maybe, with all that time on his hands, he might have seen this coming."
Bjorn hung back, aware of Freki and Geri's hungry eyes still on him. He could smell their eagerness to leap at his throat, held back only by the word of their master.
"Gunn thinks I have lost my mind," said Russ. "You do too, I see. None of you know this mind. You never have done."
He turned and gave Bjorn a fang-filled grin.
"Perhaps I have found the key, eh? Perhaps I have discovered what my father was always trying to tell me."
He walked back over towards Bjorn and opened his palm. Bone tokens rested on it, each marked with a rune of telling. He shook them, like a village scryer about to cast knucklebones on a board. Bjorn looked at them doubtfully, but the Primarch remained eager, his eyes alight with a gambler's desperate enthusiasm.
"Shall we see what they say, then?" asked Russ, moving to throw.
The comms vault was one of dozens scattered across the Hierophnical's vast innards. Each chamber was a node in a network, spread out like ganglia in a body, drawing together towards the command bridge nexus, where every signal and scrap of data was processed. At the very summit of the system was the battleship's spire of star speakers, occupied by the caste of blinded warp dreamers and protected by concentric rings of steel trap security. Breaking into that pinnacle would have been nigh impossible, and was in any case superfluous, since the lower order stations could give the intruder what he needed. He edged down the iron-ringed corridor ahead, keeping his body pressed against the near-side wall. At the end, 5 meters away, stood a pair of security doors, locked and braced, and crowned with snarling worm heads. The space in front of him was deserted, though he could already hear the rhythmic tramp of boots from lower down. He crept forwards. The facing wall was lead-lined and equipped with low-level sensor baffles, but he still could pick up blurred signals from the other side. He estimated 6 bodies within, none of them space marines, but all likely armed. He withdrew a wide-angle cortical deadener from his thigh, a neural blocker capable of inducing coma across a 10-meter diameter, and activated the power pack. His bolter, too noisy for this work, remained holstered. He edged up to the doors, checked he was unmarked, and entered a code into the door release mechanism. He had plenty of combinations to try out, most taken from the mid-ranking official he'd immobilized 6 levels down, others gleaned from listening instruments placed against unguarded comm-grid stations. The first code failed, as did the second, but the third prompted a green access rune, and the door's locking mechanism clicked clear. As the heavy panel slid open, he strode inside with the swagger of a true-born wolf. The chamber was hexagonal, 30 meters across and tiled. A huge open shaft soared away above, lined with gargoyled columns and ironwork repeater stations, and the